Hey, welcome to the Power Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm Jake Rosenberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Jacob Usani, and this is the show for entrepreneurs and business owners to get a behind-the-scenes look at how the uber-successful around us think and operate. He's the founder and CEO of Propelify, built to empower those who propel ideas into action, which was inspired by his other focus, the award-winning New Jersey Tech Meetup. Aaron Price has served as the tech community expert for New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, the White House, the NJ Economic Development Authority, Fast Company, Entrepreneur Magazine, and the Wall Street Journal. Aaron started his first commercial venture in high school after he was awarded a patent for a weightlifting device. A serial entrepreneur at heart, Aaron has since founded several technology startups. On the heels of the amazing Propelify Innovation Festival, we're excited to sit down today with Aaron Price here on the Power Entrepreneurs Podcast.
And we are live on the Power Entrepreneur. Thank you very much, Aaron Price, for joining us today on our podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So why don't you tell us how you grew up and what got you into the business world?
I grew up in Short Hills, New Jersey. I was always interested in entrepreneurship. And so I was always the guy who had the side hustle of snow shoveling and lemonade stands and whatever I could get my hands on. And then my brother and I patented a weightlifting device when we were in high school, which was a quick lesson in basically learning that there was no real addressable market of what we were going after. We built this device that helped people add weight to their bodies when they were doing pull-ups and dips by attaching weight to this harness. Turns out most people can't do a pull-up and a dip with their own body weight and don't actually need to add more resistance. And so, you know, as it translates into addressable market, was very small, but we learned a lot. Sold carabiners in high school, like these keychains to my friends to raise the capital to get the patent. So I've kind of been doing the entrepreneurial hustle for a long time. And then in college, started what was one of the first online food ordering services. So like what you guys know is like Seamless.com and Grubhub today. We started a company called Deliver You, and we processed, people were doing like 3,000 orders a month on a college campus, helping people order food from restaurants so they didn't have to wait on the phone and all the things that go along with online ordering. And then, there's a few others. Some have gone real well, some not so well, but got really involved in the tech community and eventually launched this giant festival called Propelify, and now we recently got acquired by the New Jersey Tech Council. You know, we can dig in more on some of those topics, but basically got really involved in the tech community because I found that earlier in my career it was very isolating, and by surrounding myself with other entrepreneurs, it was more fun, it was more motivating, it was really helpful.
So that's a pretty interesting background. Let's take like a step back to that time when you were kind of coming up with these different ideas of how you can, you know, branch into different areas of business. Were you just going with any idea that came to mind that you thought would work out, or kind of like, let's go through your process at the time, what you were thinking?
I mean, my process at the time is very different than my process now. So at the time, like many entrepreneurs, I was kind of falling in love with my own ideas and going all in. And certainly when I was younger, felt like time was never ending and would try things out. Now I'm much more focused on market testing and building a minimal viable product and really getting input to make sure like this, whatever the idea is going to be worth the time.
So what can you tell people that have ideas? Cause you know, a lot of entrepreneurial people, they have ideas through the roof. They don't know what to pursue, what not to pursue. What's the process? How can someone look at an idea in the right light to assess if it's potentially going to be a successful one?
The reason that Propelify is named Propelify is because I think ideas are a dime a dozen. It's that you have to propel them into reality and maintain that ridiculous forward momentum that it requires to make something real. And most of the best ideas, if you think about them, are somewhat obvious in retrospect, like Uber is a good example. But the implementation of actually delivering that service is really difficult. And market timing matters, and regulation turns out matters. And so to me, if someone is thinking about bringing something to life, I would suggest coming up with a minimal viable product basically, if it's a tech-related idea, or maybe even if it's not, coming up with a landing page, spending some money on social media marketing, to see if you can prove that anybody cares about this thing that you're trying to create. So, like, you know, in the background of this interview, you guys have a guitar. So maybe some entrepreneurs got some crazy idea about a new guitar. Instead of spending all this time and money on research and development and patents, they should just come up with a landing page with whatever the value prop is, whatever differentiates that guitar to the market. Make it look great, have a really cool value prop, and try to see if they can convert users, whether it's to sign up to learn more, to actually pre-order the thing, and then spend some money on Facebook ads or Instagram with some digital ad to see if you can actually convert people. Can you get people to click through this ad, read your site, read your copy, and sign up, convert, and whatever conversion is. And if you can do that, and you can show that there's some profitable way to do that, some profitable way to acquire customers and sell this product, you should keep going. But if you can't, you got to go back to the drawing board and figure out, like, what's wrong. Is it all off base? Is it the messaging's wrong? Is it nobody cares at all about this thing at all? And you just got to go, you know, start over something new. But especially young entrepreneurs, but overall, you should be able to prove the value prop of your idea with a relatively short investment of time and money so that you can take that next step. So to me, it's about, like in our case with this idea I shared earlier about my first business, if we had had the tools of the internet at the time to like run some ads, we would have quickly learned that there's a very small market of people who were potentially our target audience, which would have forced us to either close up shop altogether or think about how we could have modified this product to see if it had a broader audience or more appeal.
So when you mean convert, you mean people converting into just emails or people converting and actually, like, you know, doing like going on a Kickstarter and Indiegogo and actually raising capital for it?
I think it depends on what you're building. So I meant convert sort of broadly, but if we go back to this guitar example, it would definitely have to mean that they sign up to learn more at a minimum. That would be converting somebody to show interest, or actually putting a deposit down or pre-ordering the item. And so if you reverse engineer where you're trying to go, you basically want to be able to say the story, like, I had this idea for this awesome guitar, I created a landing page and I spent $2,000 on social media, and I've already got 50 orders lined up, or I've got 300 people who signed up who are psyched about it and who are emailing me something. Like, you need to show market traction somehow. How far you go down that funnel is kind of up to you as the entrepreneur. Like, ideal world, they buy the item. But in many cases, that's impractical. And it's also just really hard to do. So it could be that the conversion is like they signed up on an email list. They liked the social media post. They shared it. Something that proves they like it. That, I mean, you're just trying to build the story that says, once I have this product, everyone's going to buy it with some data.
I think it's a great thing for people to realize that with the internet now being where it is, we have this easy access to such a big test audience through social media to really utilize that. Yeah. But to take it a step back, back when you were in college, you know, a lot of people in college, especially we're seeing this more and more, are leaning into that entrepreneurial world. But a lot of people are still afraid of taking that step. Do you have any advice to someone that is young or that is in college? They've never dipped their toes into the entrepreneurial world, but they have ideas.
I would say to those people that there's a lot of things on their side for taking risks when they're at that stage of life. If they can afford to, which many of them can, you know, even if they don't think they can, you can try a lot of things that I just described pretty easily and with relatively low investment. So if you've got like college loans to pay off and you need to make that happen, like, okay, take a job or do what you got to do to make that happen. But on the side, like when you're single, I'm assuming most of the people we're talking about here are unmarried and young. You've got a lot of time on your hands. It may feel like you're really busy, but now like married, I've got two kids, life, like, you know, busy is very relative. I would say to those people, like, get off your ass and like try something and fail a whole bunch of times quickly, because your risk profile is actually relatively young. You probably don't have to put food on the table for another person. You probably don't have a mortgage to pay. You may have student loans, which are manageable, hopefully, but I wouldn't let those sorts of things stop you from trying something, because you'll probably screw up a bunch of times, and it's a lot less risky to do it when you have a more support systems like that in your life, and it's not risking your house, you know, literally sometimes.
Mm. So, like, how does somebody fail quickly?
I think it's what we just talked about, right? Like, get out of the house, go to the local events you got to talk to people and meet people and share your ideas, which I encourage people to do widely, like not to hold them close to the chest. You know, getting things to market, talking to customers, talking to investors. I mean, there's a tricky balance here. Most new ideas, there will be some level or some balance of naysayers who are going to be like, that'll never work. And the crazy gene of the entrepreneur is usually pushing through saying like, oh no, this is, the world's going to have a phone with no keyboard on it, a smartphone with no keyboard. Like, it was actually a pretty revolutionary idea if you think about it. So there's some balance of like, no, I know the market's going to want this, with proof that people will actually, buy your product or service. And so I think failing fast is about talking to as many of those people as you can, to get really good market data. Now, in some cases, like if you tried to pre-sell the iPhone in the manner we just described, I'd be fascinated to know what that would have looked like, because the way Apple would have done it, it probably would have worked. The way a scrappy entrepreneur might do it, it might be laughed at. And so there is definitely like this balance of the way that the way that it's executed matters a lot. So I think it's about just trying to get a really good, as much data as you can. At the end of the day, as an entrepreneur, like, you got to go with the things you believe in. And sometimes the market might signal early on, it doesn't believe, what you're doing, and it has to catch up. You see, so there is some level of like just pushing through and persevering through those tough moments. But you can de-risk it a whole lot by leveraging the internet and your network to find out what people really think, even if you still think they're wrong, so you can address those concerns head on. Like, if we go back to the iPhone example, people probably would have been like, oh, typing on a screen sucks. I like the, BlackBerry, you might love my Palm Pilot. I don't know if you guys are even old enough to know about Palm Pilots and BlackBerry, which was a big hurdle. Even for me, I was a late adopter into those things, because I really loved the physical keyboard. But once you try the other product, it's easy to see how the benefits of having a full-size screen outweigh the benefits of having a keyboard. Like, so thinking about how do you address those issues, Apple didn't just like, it's not just they made it cool and beautiful and Steve Jobs got up in his black pants and like made it awesome. Like, they showed a real value prop that was justified and that people believed in. And eventually when they tried it, people saw that. And so I think the entrepreneurs have to figure out if they're failing, if that exact same thing happened, if Steve Jobs was a young, broke entrepreneur trying to do that exact same thing, which in many ways he was at some point, as you go to the market and get some feedback, you figure out how to change your messaging so you can bring people along as much as you can, so that at some point when you're saying, you know what, I'm going to will this thing into existence, you do it in a way that addresses the concerns of people who maybe have been those naysayers along the way.
I think that's a great point. So let's fast track for a second. From when you started your tech meetup till now, you have 8,000 people compared to however many people you had in the beginning. Obviously, it was like, it's a huge difference. How did you scale that, and what processes and systems did you put into place that you would have some advice to give on?
Well, I'm going to get to that in a second. But in many ways, the meetup was the minimal viable product that grew Propelify. And I never intended it to be a business. I mean, it is the meetup is a nonprofit, but it wasn't built to be a money-making machine. The meetup, I never did any advertising for. I never did any marketing for. We just put on a really high-quality event, and people shared it, and it grew. And it was the right time in the market, so part of it is out of your hands. In my case, I hit it right at the right time. There was a lot of interest in the market when we started it. It still is. And then we delivered a good quality product. So after 6 years of that growing and screaming for more attention, I went all in on Propelify and the 8,000 person event and all that other stuff. But it's a really great example of like, if I was thinking about, I want to do a festival, an 8,000 person festival, a first step might've been exactly what I did, which is, well, what if I start a meetup or an event and see if I can I get 20 people to show up? Can I get 100 to show up? And so I was proving without intending to do so that there was market interest to do something bigger, which is one of the reasons I think it worked. On processes, it depends on the business you're building. I was super lean and didn't have a ton of money to put behind Propelify. So I built a lot of trust in this New Jersey tech community by frequently advocating for them, by being a real, true, authentic voice in the startup community. So when I launched Propelify, again, with a minimal viable product, I had somebody create a really beautiful flyover rendering of what we were going to launch, like a video of here's PRA in Hoboken, here's what we're doing. That was the landing page. Like, that was it. I went to market and people were like, you're crazy. And other people were like, this is awesome. And we ran with it. And then I went to the New Jersey Tech meetup community and said, here's what I'm doing with that same video. Who wants to volunteer to get involved? Because I can't pay anybody. And I was hoping we'd get like five people who'd show up and would help out. And I made it like an application process. So because I knew volunteers can flake out. And over 100 people filled out this application. And week to week for 6 months or 4 months, we met in person, we formed teams. So in my case, the processes were really challenging because everybody was remote and volunteer. I had almost no full-time, I had no other full-time staff because I was myself for a while. And so we used Slack to communicate. We used a lot of free tools, a lot of free forms, even for the website building. Like, we leveraged a lot of free technology, which is now is even more prevalent. I tried to create an environment as much as I could that empowered even these, you know, the volunteers to make these decisions and move. So for me, it was about like, how do we create a work environment that's part-time for them and remote, but still gets us over the finish line. Some simple things like Slack and a lot of web tools, and we use Trello for a lot of processes and tracking, and you know, we now Zapier to tie things together and all the whole Google suite. I mean, now it's kind of like basic 101 stuff, but at the time was a little bit more unusual. I leveraged technology as much as I could so that we didn't all have to be in the same room, and that made all the difference. Some simple things like Slack and a lot of web tools, and we use Trello for a lot of processes and tracking, and you know, we now Zapier to tie things together and all the whole Google suite. I mean, now it's kind of like basic 101 stuff, but at the time was a little bit more unusual. I leveraged technology as much as I could so that we didn't all have to be in the same room, and that made all the difference.
That's interesting. So, you know, looking at events, people go to events all the time. And one of my pet peeves is that people tend to waste a lot of time going to either events that are completely irrelevant to what they're doing or bring no value to them. What's some advice that you would give to people to look at an event and say, okay, this event is going to bring value. This event is worth spending the time on.
I guess I would rephrase it a little bit. If there are people in the room, if you're going to go to an event because you want to learn something from the speaker or you want to meet the people in the room, almost no matter how well done the event is, you should be able to accomplish those goals. Obviously, the way the event is run can have a big impact there. But if you know you're going to go to an event and Bill Gates is the speaker and you expect it to be a 100-person room and your goal is to meet Bill Gates, like, you should be able to make that happen. If you can get to that room, you know, send me an invite. But the idea that, like, you can leverage most people, I have found at events, I'm shocked by this every time, especially running entrepreneurial events, don't go up to the speaker and say hello and here's, you know, something I wanted to talk about, or can I help you, the speaker, with something and follow up. Most people aren't great at networking. So if you're interested in leveraging an event to build your network, to sell something, to learn something, just be a little bit thoughtful about it. Like, it's not the job of the event to pull you along. A good event does that, but it's your job, especially as an entrepreneur, to make the most of those kinds of situations. So I try to create an environment that accelerates those things, that helps you meet the person sitting next to you, that creates opportunities for you to meet the speakers. Certainly it puts content in front of people that's valuable. But even if I was doing none of that, if I just convened the people in the room and sucked everything else, it's not that difficult to say hi to the guy next to you, to be interested genuinely in what he or she is doing, to think about how you might be helpful, because then they'll probably think about how they might want to help you out. It's not rocket science, but showing up and being intentional, I find to be more rare.
And how do you sell the speakers at the events on coming to the events, on whether it's like, what's your reaching out process to these speakers until like they're actually finished the event?
So I'm going to answer that more broadly, because I think there's a sales lesson to be learned in how we do it. So the way that we attract speakers is by, we started with my own, obviously my own personal network, and inviting people in who basically trusted me that this was worth their time. I always asked those people to invite in others. I always ran the event really well. People's expectation of what a meetup is a lot different than what we actually deliver at the New Jersey Tech Meetup. And it's really like a small business conference every single, it used to be every single month for 8 years. And so speakers come and they're like, holy shit, this is actually legit. We're actually, one, Aaron's running a good event. Two, the people who show up are really entrepreneurs who I want to be, you know, I want to be speaking to. And so even though I might normally get paid 50 grand to do a talk, I'll do this one for nothing. And so building that kind of credibility is really important. But I've done lots of cold outreach to high profile people, inviting them to speak. And this is where I think the lesson in sales is. I was always very, as short as I could get my message across, because everybody's very busy and inboxes are slammed. Added some credibility elements, like here's who we've attracted in the past who've spoken. Made their ability to say yes as easy as I could. And of course, many of them don't say yes, but if you get enough notes out the door to, you know, in an authentic way with a clear value proposition, like enough people will say yes. And I think that's what happens in sales. Like, and I would be persistent. Another tool, by the way, I follow up with everybody, because I use a tool called Follow Up Then, which tracks all my emails to make sure that I follow up at a certain cadence. And yes, where's another, and there's a lot of these, but I always would follow, and most of these people wouldn't write me back the first time. For some people, now myself included, often the first email, if people don't respond the second time, is a good filter for how serious they are. So just like being persistent, being respectful, being concise, I think is like a great way. Having a real value proposition is a great way to sell something. In this case, we were selling that, will you invest your time with us? But it's exactly the same way I've sold sponsorships to Propelify. You know, anything where I was trying to get somebody's time and attention, it was, I'm always thinking about, like, this person's probably super busy, probably doesn't feel like writing me a check or showing up to my thing. How do I make sure they understand why it's worthwhile?
That's, like you said, it is a great tip, a lot more broadly than just events. So, you know, through all of this, I think a great point you made a little bit earlier when we were talking about, you know, kids in college or people that are just dipping their toes into the entrepreneurial world is that some people don't really know how to present their product well, and that's why they may get negative feedback. A great point on top of that is that mentorship is very helpful. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with the idea of mentorship. There's an oversaturated market of mentors out there. Have you had a mentor in your life? And what advice would you give to someone to choosing a good mentor?
So first on, you had a question about if they can't deliver the value prop. It sounded to me like you were saying that they almost couldn't design the landing page or design something.
Or they just didn't know how to.
Or don't even know how to, right? There are a lot of resources available. Practically, like I love Strikingly as a website that helps you build, as a website builder that looks great. With WordPress and things like Elementor or Thrive Themes, like you can build things really inexpensively. There's a lot of tools that make this happen. And then you can, if you're not a good designer, you can use sites like Upwork and Fiverr and others to find resources to kind of get you get scrappy and you get this stuff done. On the mentorship question, I have had a bunch of mentors, and usually with me, I didn't go out the door saying, hey, my name is Aaron, will you be my mentor? It was more like, and the two people I'm thinking of in particular, you know, I built relationships over many years. Both of them I met through the meetup, both were speakers, where I would just kind of go to them for advice. I mean, we became friendly, and then I would go to them for advice. And then over time, it was more structured advice. And as this sale of Propelify to the Tech Council unfolded, like a few of these people were enormously valuable in helping me navigate how the deal should unfold. So I think, you know, finding a mentor is a lot about like the two people get along and want to hang out for coffee once a month, once a week, once a quarter, whatever it is. So finding those people, I think, can be a little tricky. I would say like going to an event, building relationships, at some point you'll click with somebody, and then saying like, hey, you know, these are the sorts of things I'm struggling with. Would you be down to meet up once in a while or take a phone call once in a while to help me talk through some of these things? I think you'll find more often than not people are willing. I agree with you, there's an oversaturation of people who think they are mentors when they really should be the mentees. But you don't need like Bill Gates to be the mentor. Sometimes you need just a smart person who's thoughtful, who you can share your ideas with, because when the 1 + 1 = 3 in many of those scenarios. And so if you can find someone who is more, even is just like an advisor, or just a business friend, and you share your struggles and concerns, like getting it out of your own brain forces you to synthesize the thought, to communicate to somebody else, here's what I'm struggling with, which is part of the half of it's just that process. And then hearing their input, like you may or may not agree, but it'll force you to come up with some line of thinking. It keeps you accountable to somebody else. Like, you don't need someone who is, you know, some tech celebrity or entrepreneurial celebrity. You need somebody who's smart, who's thoughtful, who you can trust, who does their best, even if their advice isn't always right, just to help you think through these things. So I think it's about like building relationships, making sure it's a two-way street, and being honest about what you think you can get out of it.
So like, what books do you recommend? What courses have you, either courses, seminars, what are some of those educational aspects that really stood out to you, and what are they?
So I struggle to focus long enough to sit down and read a book. So that's not my strength, which is one of the reasons I started this event thing, because I invited in a lot of the authors to speak. So that's how I get the knowledge, which has been great. Nir Eyal, I think, is an awesome speaker and author who wrote a book called Hooked, which is about building products that create habit-forming attachments to users. And then now he's written a book called Indistractable about making sure you can focus. And so he's someone who I highly recommend. Lewis Schiff wrote a book, also one of our speakers, about what did he call his? It was about basically the habits of successful CEOs, but he has a much sexier title than that. Ari Mizell is all about productivity and like life hacks of ways that you can maximize your time and outsource things that you shouldn't be doing. So because of Ari, I use a tool called Fancy Hands as my virtual assistant that schedules meetings and does all these one-off tasks for me, and lots of other things that he's brought to my attention. I like practical, useful day-to-day advice. And so those kinds of people and those kinds of books are the things that resonate with me the most.
Nice. So to wrap it up, we always love asking, from your perspective, what's the difference between a standard entrepreneur and a power entrepreneur?
I think a power entrepreneur is probably someone in line with my thinking of Propelify. It's people who take ideas and turn them into action. And we like to say idle ideas don't fly. If you think about that, like the idea is the plane's fuselage sitting on a runway going nowhere. Like that's the potential of a great idea. That's just the, hey, I got this. Wouldn't this be amazing if? That's the plane. The actual reality of how does this thing get lift and weather the storm, and in that case, the turbulence and all the moving pieces that literally and figuratively make that happen, that's the hard part. And I would say that to me, a power entrepreneur is somebody who has the absolute determination and resiliency to push through the guaranteed hard times that come at you when you're an entrepreneur, because they're so focused on success.
I like that.
I like that too. So Aaron, how can the audience reach out to you if they have any questions or they want to find out more about what you do?
Check out the NJ Tech Council, njtc.org. We desperately need a new website. So if anybody wants to chip in there, feel free to hit me up. Also check out propelify.com, and I'm the best social media site would be either for me is LinkedIn or Twitter at AP Startup on Twitter. I'm pretty responsive.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, Aaron, for joining us today on the Power Entrepreneurs Podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, you powerhouse. You made it to the end of the episode. Not everyone can do that. We really appreciate you listening to our show every week. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know. You can find us on social media by looking for The Power Entrepreneur. We're on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, even Twitter. Look for The Power Entrepreneur or go to our website, thepowerentrepreneur.com. If you really, really love the podcast, I'd highly appreciate it if you went on iTunes right now and left us a review. It helps us way more than you know. Go out there and make it a powerful life.